We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sox Machine.
James Fegan, White Sox reporter for SoxMachine.com.
I can anticipate this question is probably way too early.
On Twitter at JR Fegan.
Yes, James.
Asking the questions to get the answers you need.
If you knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendricks?
If I'd known that, I didn't know that. I'd have checked the rule. I'm guessing you know the rules better. Now I know.
James Fegan with Bernstein and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We want Machine.
Sox Machine. Sox Machine.
I hope the Sox Machine is okay. I hope it doesn't need replacement parts, or it's sort of like having a boat in salt water where even if you take care of the machine, it's the very nature of its existence means
you're
it's going to erode.
You're conflating the Sox Machine with the White Sox. The Sox Machine was prepared for
okay,
this.
I'm just making sure the Sox
the
Machine
White Sox might not have been.
Is ready to get through whatever this is going to be. James Fegan joins us to talk about the White Sox, ostensibly. He is at SoxMachine.com. He is at James Fegan on Twitter. He is with us on the Score Hotline that is presented by Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com. James, I want to start first, if I may, with the injury to Luis Robert, which, as usual with the White Sox, was caused by running on the bases, as dangerous as that is for all of the White Sox talent. And now we're hearing at a minimum 6 weeks and maybe more like eight and maybe more than that. What's the latest?
I inquired again today and I was like the baseline timeline, if there's a baseline time, if that makes sense, is 6 to 8 weeks. But I think obviously there's more concern about this being the same hip and the same, you know, tendon that he was injured previously. So projecting exactly that it's going to be like the baseline for this injury, the recovery, I think would be 6 to 8 weeks, but saying that like, it's going to be, exactly the same and have the same like kind of tautness to it, that it'll function and you can have a lot of confidence in it after it's now kind of given out on him from high effort running twice in his career, is possibly what is fueling maybe more of that longer concern or getting to a stage where maybe he plateaus at some point and it takes a longer window, but that's all too far out to really say. But I think it's 6 to 8 weeks, but with this longer concern over the fact that this has happened to him twice now and this area, it's a little bit of a different spot according to Luis, but you know, now you can say like his right hip is a concern. It's something that's happened to him twice in a, you know, a young age and in a relatively tight time span.
You made mention of it last week. And you were talking about the issue of depth as it pertains to Eloy and him getting injured. There's no replacing Robert, obviously. But to have both of those guys be gone at the same time, I can't imagine that right now in that clubhouse there's a lot of hope when walking into the season there was a lack of hope. So how would you describe how the White Sox are handling these two crisis points?
I think you went from, hey, we still got to stay positive. They were really energetic off the Braves win at the end of that last series, to a little bit of frustration where you kind of climaxed with Garrett Crochet saying like guys need to get pissed off at the end of a Sunday's game. There's some irritation. You know, it's become it's almost become the they reached a breaking point of not wanting to be asked about Abreu over and over again last year. I think now it's probably getting to that point of like, how do you keep your head up after Eloy and Robert? And I think there's a little bit of like shorter answers about that as the weekend wore on in Kansas City for understandable reasons. But yeah, I mean, even you talk about reports of them like looking for corner outfielders. I don't know if it's like Bob Nightingale or somebody said like Tommy Pham being a replacement, like they could find like other, like that'd be a good idea in the sense of like they could use more corner bats, but like you can't find a plus hitting center fielder on the minor league free agent market or off the scrap heap. Like there's not really a way to structure replace him on their roster. Like, yes, they got Dominic Fletcher, and part of the reason was knowing that like they would need a backup center fielder at some point, but they can't really fuel, they can't replace the middle of the order and they're up the middle defense. And they can't really have like that, you know, the kind of the idea for how their defense would be improved is that you'd have Fletcher or someone of that caliber playing in the corner and stretching him out to the center. And now having guys like Robbie Grossman playing the corners, that's no longer like really projects as like a plus outfield defense anymore. So that's something that they can't really structurally recreate either. Like having that kind of middle of the order masher who also provides plus center field defense and allows you to filter out your personnel to maybe positions where they can be plus, that's also gone. So yeah, it was already supposed to be weak offense. It was already supposed to be a unit that really couldn't prop up them to contending. And now you've taken out what would make what their one kind of special thing in their alignment is. It weakens both sides of the ball considerably. And for, you know, at least some significant period of time.
Three starts now for Garrett Crochet that have been pretty good. What does he attribute this good start of the season to?
I mean, he's healthy. You're seeing like the top flight fastball. I mean, you're probably seeing like the 2021 fastball he had out of the bullpen, but in a starter arsenal at this point where he can really work 95, 97, you know, two, three times through the order. I think he was least happy about his command last time out than he has been of any outing, but it was still obviously useful. His fastball still played in the zone, even at that velocity. I think, you know, the big thing with this clicked in a way that I wasn't anticipating even at the end of spring is that he just kind of found a third pitch over spring training in that cutter to where he didn't really feel like he needs to really think about the changeup a lot. He is trying out some grips. He has thrown a Vulcan changeup like on sidelines, but it's not this pressing thing for him where like the starting package doesn't work anymore. He's kind of found this third thing that grabs strikes in between his big kind of sweepy slider and heater. And that was, you know, that was a question for him on draft night. That was a question for whenever you're talking about this conversion, is that he didn't really have a third pitch and now he kind of has one. And it's something that fits into what he can already throw, which is just kind of a hard middle pitch between his two, which is main signature plus outings. It's not a great pitch on its own in a vacuum. You wouldn't just launch a career off that cutter, but it's working for him in a way that, you know, I don't think we anticipated when we were first talking about this project.
James, I'm curious if you noticed, as I have, that at his advanced age of 37 now, Martin Maldonado, who made a living as a defensive catcher, is not a very good defensive catcher. It doesn't look to me like he's tracking balls well. He's kind of boxing at them late. He's had trouble keeping some wild pitches blocked up in front of him. If he can't be a plus defender, how is he a major leaguer?
Because this pitching set, I will say that, like, credit to him for Crochet is that they've talked about how Crochet's fastballs ride or cut was not intention right now. So he's particularly difficult to catch and hit. So he winds up boxing at Crochet a lot. But I was talking to Jordan Schusterman, who's like one half of Cespedes Barbecue, about this in preseason, because obviously he covered a lot of the playoff chase. And he wasn't saying on record, but I don't think he'd mind, is that like anything you can quantify Maldonado at, it's not going to be good right now at this stage of his career. Anything you can't quantify him at, he's awesome at, which is like a very unsatisfying thing. And obviously it's the reason why, you know, Houston would move on from him. But I think for this franchise, knowing what their goals were this season, knowing that they had like young starters they'll be breaking in, you know, beyond Crochet, I'm sure we'll see Nick Nastrini and ideally Drew Thorpe and others over the course of the season. they, especially working after, you know, their catching mix for the last couple of years with Yasmani Grandal, who's not revered this aspect, they were like, let's have somebody who can really be hands-on in game planning. Let's have somebody who's like a third coach out there. Let's have someone who's, you know, nurturing our young starters in some way about how to prepare for games. And yeah, he's not going to steal strikes the way he used to or block the way he used to. I think he's had two pass balls in Kansas City. I think that at some point there's a breaking point in like how much the physical stuff slips, where it's like creating its own problems, where that mentorship, you know, gets canceled out. But as far as like providing a more healthy atmosphere for their pitchers preparing, I think that's the trade they were making. It's just, you're not going to get offense, and you're going to have to some point midseason make this calculation about whether the, you know, lack of framing and blocking is creating its own problems. But I know that from their game planning meetings, from their, you know, talking to Ethan Katz, I know they're happy with what he's giving as far as the softer skills, because that's what he's there to provide.
I hate to be this blunt with a question, and you might not have the answer to it. Why isn't Andrew Vaughn better?
I don't know. This is year four of trying to figure that out. He's got a lot of, you know, he was someone who is supposed to have, at least when he was coming up, more kind of all field raw power. It seems more like he really only consistently leaves the yard to the pull side. And it was somebody who was supposed to have like this batting champion level hit tool. And instead, we've seen, you know, a lot of struggles with breaking balls. We've not seen like the walks that his understanding of the zone would seem to indicate. And you've seen a lot of ground balls. And it seems like at this point, talking to pro scouts, it's just not a swing that they see, you know, playing up to produce the level of power that you need from that position. It's just way too ground ball and rollover oriented. There's been stuff to do with pitch selection. There's stuff with timing at his late kick that could get him better optimized, that, you know, the Sox want to see working at its best capacity before they really pass judgment. But it's been, you know, 3 to 4 years, we're in the fourth year now of looking for someone to be a plus offensive contributor, and it hasn't broken out yet. It could be a late career thing. The tools are certainly there, but I think if you're reaching the point of exhaustion with him as far as seeing a plus hitter, I get it. I think there's probably some postmortem to do about whether skipping the minors was really a thing for him. It doesn't seem like it's panned out. But because he hasn't like sank in some big way, the confidence level is high enough where he didn't like get overwhelmed by Major League Baseball. But you wonder if it's done something where he's not tapping into this big ceiling that everyone saw for him, that it was going to be this big early peak because his skills are supposed to be more mature. And then you'd worry about him, how much all the physical tools would wrap out after 30. But instead, we're seeing a guy who's really not hit that next level in the way that I think everyone talking to him or watching him would think he is capable of at some point in his 20s. It's weird. That was probably too long to say, I don't know, because the real answer is I don't know. But it's kind of confounded a lot of evaluators, I feel.
When I ask if and when Pedro Grifol is going to run out of lipstick for this pig of a team that he's managing, I mean that more so internally than for us, because he's been gibbering sort of madly for a while now as far as we're concerned. But internally, is he saying the same things about, we just got to find out who we are, or we got to get in the cage and we'll settle in? Like, it's April 8th, man. And he's already saying, it sounds desperate. And I, it's one thing for us to sense that. If his team senses that, that's a big problem.
So what's the question?
It's like how desperate can he get at this point if he's already this desperate? Like what, where does he go from here?
I don't know. I think he has to assume that Andrew Vaughn and Andrew Benintendi are not going to post like 400 and 500 OPSs all year. He certainly has like a lot of confidence in Benintendi and like is his.
But Benintendi sucks.
I know, like the results have been very bad, but I don't think he really has a counter move to go to on the roster. Like banking a lot on like Oscar Colas being ready after he was too raw, or like banking like on Zach Deloach. Like, I don't think there's big like outfield prospects to really turn to, or other bats in the system to really, they weren't. Andrew Benintendi, like as a concept, is already like, he's competent at everything. He's not plus at anything. To make him such a high priority in free agency is because you don't have these contingency plans for someone to, you know, kind of fill in the skills that he already offers. So I don't see what his other card in his hand would be, other than hoping Benintendi gets back to like a league average hitter at some point, which, yeah, is not exciting. Yes. But like, given where yes. the roster is, like, they could use a lot more league average hitters. I think they have like two or three right now. And one of them is Gavin Sheets, who obviously you're kind of hoping this continues based off how last season went. But, you know, you also had the last two seasons to say, like, maybe that's not the most stable thing. I don't see what other like options he has a lot. And I think it's aware that like this is kind of a poor roster that's not going to win for him. And then he's going to be at the end of a season where he's got two, you know, last place or last place caliber records to his name. And it's, if they're moving on and trying to look at like, we're trying to take the next step and win more next year, it'd probably be pretty easy for them to say like, well, let's move on from Grifol and find a new option. So I don't know. It's, he's not put in a great situation to succeed with what this group is and what his first season was. I don't know what the kind of move is for him.
James, this is a bigger question, and it's a little bit about you. When it comes to how to cover this, walking in, the expectations were very low, but now it looks like they might be in danger of going lower than those expectations. What do you think is interesting from a coverage standpoint when a team is seemingly this bad?
Probably the guys who aren't bad are pretty interesting. I mean, I like to just talk to guys about what goes into it and what they're thinking of and what they're working on and how they make things work for them. Like, I just talked to Jordan Leisure for like 5 minutes yesterday just about like how he thinks of throwing his curveball. Like, that's the sort of stuff that like interests me, even like if Jordan Leisure is not going to make the offense hit or even fix the bullpen on his own. I think the way Garrett Crochet is kind of coming to his own, the way that he like has gone from like a guy who threw 10 innings last year or like he ever knew what his role is going to be to now he's the number one starter and he takes it upon himself to like call a team out. I think that's an interesting evolution. You kind of have to find your little pockets of interest in the roster and in the clubhouse. And you know, if you watch the game close enough, there's kind of weird little machinations going on all the time. I don't think it's that hard of a job. I think if it was just the days where there's just an easy, obvious story, I mean, it's not boring, but I feel like it takes less skill. And I like finding things that are interesting inside the game, even when one team is just getting waxed the same reason over and over again. I think that's kind of the fun part of the job.
Yeah. But even in that, a clubhouse is usually challenging, but it becomes more challenging when guys don't like coming to work every day because they know that it's likely that they're going to lose and continue to lose. Like it's just a hard environment to be in. I love your approach because it doesn't seem like it phases you, but it sometimes phases players and they become less willing to talk about some of the little stuff because the big stuff's so bad.
Yeah, I definitely ran into it a little bit over the weekend and asking people about like, hey, how do you try not to do too much with, you know, Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez out, and they don't want to really talk about that because like the implication is that their chopped liver are not as good. And how do you, face the truth about like how it's all on you now and you're not really suited to pick up the slack. So yeah, it's more challenging, and certainly someone who knew the entire like farm system throughout the rebuild and covered so many guys from A-ball, it was so weird second half of last season to walk in on weekends and look around the clubhouse and be like, who the hell are half these people? Did they pick them up like a couple weeks ago? Like I feel lost. It's definitely a challenge, and I think it's hard to right now to say like, for a season where it's not really expected to get better and maybe the main things you were supposed to watch this year are currently on the IL. I mean, their media guide cover is just Luis Robert. Like, what do you talk about this season without him? But there's always opportunity. There's always like a chance for someone to like make themselves like there's never been a more wide open landscape to just say like, you're a meaningful player on the White Sox right now. So someone could step up, but yeah, I don't want to say that this is a positive situation because it's not, but it's just like it's not my problem. At the end of the day, I'll figure it out.
that's how you brought him in, Lawrence. You're right. That's exactly what you were saying.
I love that as a slogan for the team, White Sox baseball. It's not my problem. James, as always, we appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
That's James Fegan. We're going to have some fun next. I there was just so much joy on this broadcast with Ian Eagle as a part of it during the Final Four.